Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
All right, welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Got guest David Combs, former, actually, PJ Boatwright intern with the IGA, now doing a little teaching, doing a little playing, doing a little family time. David, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Clint.
You bet. I've known you for quite a long time, your days at Simpson, but I know you grew up in Minnesota, but I don't know exactly where. Where'd you kind of get started with the game up there?
Yeah, I'm a Twin City kid through and through. Excited for the Twins tomorrow, by the way.
There you go.
Start the year off right. But I grew up in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. So just on the north side, kind of the classic home to what used to be what was the senior tour called back then? We played at Bunker Hills. Bunker Hills is the home of kind of the original 3M class or 3M Open when the senior tour was running through. I think it was like the Coldwell Banker or something like that.
Yeah. But
that was kind of the the home course, the good old par three executive there.
Okay.
It was kind of where, like my sons do, I played everything. So golf was not as important. I think I played baseball, I played golf, I played basketball, I played football.
Okay.
No hockey.
Okay.
But it was just kind of something that we did once in a while with friends, and it really never was a focus actually when I was a kid. Probably it got a little bit more important in high school.
Okay.
Because in Minnesota, baseball's not summer sport, it's a spring sport. So I had to decide between baseball and golf or track.
Okay.
And so I kind of ended up on golf, and I think that kind of started me caring about it a little bit more. I was okay. I was fine. Like, I made the varsity team and stuff, but it kind of got me, I think, a little more focused. So that's kind of where I'd say golf really started to get going and be more of a joy of my life rather than just something to do.
Okay. So it was kind of just one of the other things you did, and you enjoyed doing it, obviously, but it was at that point, it was more of, I don't want to say a hobby, but you know, you were playing some other stuff.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, I think my dad was even just a little bit more mad at me because he always thought my best sport was baseball. And he was actually a little upset with me that I didn't continue that. Because he played golf a little bit, but he played baseball too. And he was very kind of disappointed because he thought that was my best sport, where I always considered basketball to be my best sport. And so it was kind of unique, but it kind of provided me an opportunity that I think I had a better chance at earlier on in high school, where with baseball, I think it would have taken more time. And so I just kind of ran with it.
Nice. Well, I was actually just up in Minnetonka. We had our one of our rules workshops up there. So I just got back from there. So I was up in your neck of the woods. I didn't even know it.
Oh yeah. No, heck yeah. That's a little that I'd call that the you went to the rich side of town. I'm in the old part of the cities. We're old school up in
Well, that's probably why I fell out of place then, you know. So you played a lot of sports in high school, and then ended up at Simpson College. How did you end up down here? Did you have a connection down there, or just an opportunity to play some sports?
You know what? It was still one of the more random things that happened at the time. An assistant at Simpson, he had family in Blaine.
Okay.
I don't even remember why he was there.
Okay.
But I went to Totino Grace High School. So that's in Fridley, kind of a Catholic high school up there. And he, for some reason, we must have played a relative of his or something like that in a basketball game. And so the coach made or kind of came up to me after the game my junior year and just kind of made a comment and started talking about the school and stuff. And I think it kind of just started to become one of the options that I started to think about as I entered my summer before my senior year, where I started looking at colleges and stuff of what to do. And I had a big desire, I think, to play sports. Mm-hmm. Basketball was the number one desire for sure. So that kind of got me thinking about it. And then I went down and as every kid does in the summer, a summer visit to all their schools. And so I visited a bunch of schools in the Midwest and started to kind of figure out what's out there. And when I went down to Simpson, me being a city kid, it was kind of the one school in Iowa, at least, that I felt it was city, where mm-hmm. at least it was not yeah. too far removed from Des Moines. And
sure.
Des Moines was still very different at that time. It hadn't developed like it had. But things had started to pop in, like Wells Fargo Arena, I think, was being built at the time, and some other things were starting to change. So I felt comfortable that I wasn't going to be removed from city life. And then it just so happened, and I still vividly remember, I don't know why, but on my visit, I met with the coaches, or the basketball coaches, and they were great, and kind of painted a picture. But my tour guide was commonly referred to, as I found out, Mr. Simpson. His name was Dan Carver, and he was like the president of the student body. And he just made it seem like it was the greatest place in the world, and just sold it as far as the people and the experiences and opportunities and whatnot. And so I liked that. And, you know, I had that to think about and compare. And as the year went on, I kind of narrowed it down to Simpson or St. Thomas in Minnesota. Okay. Both wanted me to play basketball, and it uniquely worked out, though, that when I visited Simpson later on, I met with Coach Shoup, who at the time was the golf coach, mm-hmm. and he, at a Division III, you can just kind of talk to people, and they're like, yeah, we'd love to have you try out, and we talked about what I did and how I was as a golfer, and the scores I was shooting at the time, and they were okay. I mean, it wasn't anything, but at least he said, yeah, why don't you come and try out? And I said, what the heck? You know, I could play two things that I enjoyed doing. And I think at St. Thomas, it wasn't going to be like that. And then the other part was, I think from my graduating class of like 320 or whatever it was, I think there was like 40 something kids going to St. Thomas.
Okay.
Kind of said, you know what the hell, let's try a new start. So I came down here with no connection, no knowledge, except for who I had met coaching wise, and it all worked out.
So I apologize because I don't know this. Did you play basketball your whole time at Simpson or no?
I did not. I played my first 2 years. And you know, my dream as a kid was to play in the NBA, and then I kind of blame my mom for this. God love her, but she's 5'3" and my dad is 6'5".
Yeah.
And my mom kind of screwed me on my height. So for some reason, God stopped me at, you know, 5'8", 5'9" on a good day. Mm-hmm. And so it ended up happening that, let's see, what was it? I think I had to have my shoulder fixed again. Broke my foot my sophomore year toward the end of the season. I think I had tore like my MCL or something like that freshman year. I mean, the only way for me to play, and I was getting time, the only way for me to play was to be the scrappy, loose ball, dive on the floor, take charges kind of player. And I was still in my body for whatever reason. It just wasn't holding up. And so even I think it was my sophomore year, I played spring golf season on a busted foot because I didn't want to miss it.
Sure.
So I put it off surgery or whatever until the end of that year. So I still kind of missed that I didn't get to finish it. I loved the game. I ended up helping out the girls team. I'd call it as a graduate assistant / playing assistant, and helped the girls team, which was really good when I was down there. But just 2 years of basketball, but all 4 years of golf.
Okay. Looking back, do you kind of remember your game kind of progressing, you know, a little bit through college, or what did that kind of transformation look like? I don't know if I mentioned this, but you were 13th in the Player of the Year standings last year on the IGA circuit. So you're a heck of a player. What's that transformation looked like for you from your kind of your college days till now?
The first week I was down there for tryouts, I remember going out there and, you know, everyone's coming from, hey, they were actually recruited or playing there. And then we also had a player, Mike Martin.
Yeah, I remember him.
Mike Martin was phenomenal. He hit the biggest two iron, I think, besides Sean McCarty I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. And we had guys like that. And then Jason Bjorklund, who worked for the IGA, was a player.
Yeah.
Steady Eddie, as he was. And I remember in tryouts playing with those guys and just feeling comfortable and playing well. And then ultimately, I think I didn't play in the first varsity meet, but basically from then on out, I really never left it. And it just kind of gave me a little bit of confidence. But the one thing I do remember as I grew up wasn't necessarily so much technical skill, because I just was self-taught. I never had lessons. I never did anything but kind of watch and visualize and just do my own thing, which is kind of why the way my swing is what it is. It's really long, super long. But my mental and my maturity of understanding how to play the game of golf grew up big time. And I think that helped me navigate courses and that stuff better. My short game has always been what my go-to is, because that's what I grew up on. I grew up on playing in the backyard and being creative. And again, I was self-taught. So I just figured out my own way of doing things. And I learned, you know, your little tips and tricks along the way. But it kind of started to grow. And I remember after my freshman year, Mike was graduating and we kind of had a bunch of guys that, we didn't know kind of who was going to replace someone like that, because I think he won the conference title like the year before, mm-hmm. As an individual. And I kind of told Coach Shoup, I said, I want to, you know, be that person and that one player. And I think I just kind of started to fall in love with the game more and more. And I feel like even in college, I got better. But even after college, I kept, because of the passion, I think I kept improving. Was never consistent, but I kept improving. And mm-hmm. I've been lucky that even now, that as a 37-year-old and father of two, I've found a way, actually, I would say, to keep getting better. I think this has been my highest finish in the Player of the Year standings, I think, since being able to keep playing.
Sure.
So I think it started there, and I think it's just been fun to keep learning from all these guys that I get a chance to play with. I mean, that's the great thing about this state and the golf in the state, is that some of these mid-ams are some of the best players I have ever been around. And just to learn from them and to play with them and to make those connections. And to, again, me, I'm a visual learner. So I watch other guys and I learn from what they do. And, you know, I don't take lessons. I don't have trainers. I do my thing, but I learn from others. And I think that's been a great thing for me the last, you know, 10 years of really maybe spending some more time on my game. That's what I've learned best from.
Well, you answered my question. I was going to kind of ask you kind of what you thought maybe you kind of hang your hat on, you know, as far as your game. And I would agree with that if you were to ask me. You know, I always thought you had a really solid short game and just were always able to kind of get the ball in the hole. You're just able to figure it out one way or the other. So you kind of nailed that.
Yeah, no,
I had in mind.
I definitely, that's my hang on my hat. You know, I've definitely improved in my ball striking and my ability to score, but I never was afraid if I got a little off track that I could find a way to grind. Mm-hmm. And I think that always kept me in a place where I could compete and be present, but it kind of still, until I got a little better at ball striking, until I kind of felt that next level up that I was able to score it, that it finally started to change. But I can always hang my hat, even if I don't strike it well, that I can find a way to grind through a round, even if things aren't going my way.
So following Simpson, you interned with the IGA. What's maybe a couple memories you have from that summer?
Oh, yeah. So it was that was unique because I actually, so my starting with the IGA, my official internship started after my junior year.
Okay.
Bjorklund hooked me up in terms of making me aware of the opportunity.
Okay.
And I needed an internship anyway for my, I had a sports mid minor that I was getting, so I needed an internship anyway.
Okay.
And that was perfect. So Mr. Bill Dickens was the ED at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad was there and Jason was there. And then, you know, that was an awesome opportunity. It was still at the time too, which I was lucky enough to do it. The first week of your internship, they sent myself and then the women's intern at the time, Cynthia Whitmore, out to Far Hills to headquarters.
Yeah.
And so that was just an experience in itself, to go through some kind of almost rural school, just an internship school, to go through the testing center and just to see the museum and all of that. That was awesome to start it off. And, you know, throughout the summer, it was great to start meeting people. And it was really kind of what I wanted to do all along. I wanted to work in the sports industry of some type and just be around athletics and the business environment and have the combination. So, you know, to do all of that was great, from helping run events to some of the marketing to collaborating with courses and learn course rating. And, you know, it was just a great experience for me as a growth to go through all of that. And we were joking before we started, and I got to bring it up because it was. So one of the best memories was, I don't know why I was an idiot, but at Coldwater, I don't remember what the event was, but we were hosting an event at Coldwater, and on the other side of the path, in between the second green and eight, there's a little pathway you can cut, and you always try to find the simplest way to get around. I was just trying to be smart. So I zoomed into that little cutoff, little but unknown to me, it was muddy as hell. And my front wheels just started spinning and I started spinning back, and that sucker was stuck. So right in between the two, I had to make the lovely radio call to say, hey, if someone, because we were setting up for the day.
Okay, so this was early. This was early in the day.
This was early. So, of course, it was probably a lot wetter than I probably thought. And
yeah.
So, there's a classic picture you said you probably still have of me flipping off the camera, standing right by the golf cart. That definitely was there. You know, another memory, and I think some of the longtime mid-ams would appreciate it, but I was at the match play that year. 2007 at, I think that's where it was at, I can't remember if it was that year or the next summer, but at Lake Panorama, John Brown and Jim Curl were in a match and went extra. And I think, I can't remember if it was Chad or Bill told me to catch up to that match just to see how it was going. And they were heading to the third hole, and I pull up right to the bottom of the green, and Jim teed off first, and unbeknownst to what I would expect, it was a nice one hop hit pin dropped in. And that was, you couldn't have asked for a better way for Jim to beat John that day. You know, and John just, you know, had to just laugh and, you know, hit his shot. And, but pretty cool to see a Hall of Famer do that. And and to win a match in that type of environment, especially against another Hall of Famer like John.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that was a pretty cool memory.
For sure.
And then what else? I mean, you know, just the other part of it was, I was so thankful because during that time, that was our recession in the economy.
Yeah, sure.
So I think the stat was 50% of my graduating class of 2008, just across the country, went back to live at home with mom and dad. And the following summer after I graduated, I mean, that was – basically Bill just said, we'd like to keep you on.
Sure.
And, you know, for me to work full time my senior year, basically, and then also to have a job when I graduated and something I really enjoyed and loved to do, couldn't ask for anything better. So that was some definitely really cool memories of just some simple IGA things that I can recall, and definitely got me started on the right foot.
So following that, you got into teaching. I know, did you get into coaching as well right away after that, or did you, that work out?
Yeah, the transition was kind of unique just because at that time, again, as the IGA being the way we are structured revenue-wise, everything was so down and, you know, golf was not a priority. So I remember us losing members and, you know, not having the revenue. And it was kind of a sad day when I got called into Bill's office and they said they wouldn't be able to keep me on and stay employed. So that was kind of about, a couple months before my last day was going to be and where they weren't be able to keep me on. So
okay.
I started looking and I was looking at, you know, all the financial and insurance companies and interviewed places, and those jobs were just not going to work. And it just so happened that winter I started working with Coach O'Connor at Dowling with his middle school program for basketball.
Okay.
Mike was one of my assistants at Simpson my first couple of years, and I had stayed in touch with him. He was a great guy. And I had reached out and said, if he needed any help, I'd be happy to do it. And there wasn't anything at the high school at the time, but at Dowling, but there was for his middle school program. So I started coaching, and it kind of reminded me of the influence that coaches had on me. And it kind of triggered my interest to get back into teaching. And so I kind of started to inquire and try to figure out what it was going to take. And Simpson and Drake both had these master's programs that you could get your license in about 2 years.
Okay.
And it ended up being just from, I think, a cost and just convenience standpoint that Simpson was going to work better. And I only needed, I think, two classes to get my endorsement finished in business.
Okay.
And so I went back, got my classes, did some part-time work. And then I started working at Valley Southwoods as an associate for kind of the year and a half that I did my schooling. I even worked at Best Buy part-time, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. I think I worked like 70 to 75 hours a week. I coached the middle school kids in the wintertime and did my coursework and got my master's done. And my first teaching job was then, 2011, I think, at Woodward Granger. And I started basketball right then and there.
Okay.
I didn't start golf until the following year. So I was the boys and girls golf coach at Woodward Granger for 9 years. I was basketball for 3 or 4 there, but then I joined Mike and his staff at Dowling for 6.
Okay.
So that kind of was, I mean, definitely coaching was a part of my teaching. I consider mm-hmm. teaching and coaching the same thing. I coach in the classroom and on the, you know, floor. I teach in the classroom and on the floor. It doesn't matter to me. It's teaching all the time. So it just fit perfectly and meshed to what I think I can have an impact on kids. And I'm lucky to have continued that now that this is my second year at Northwest High School here in Waukee. And I'm the boys golf coach here and an assistant basketball coach for the boys team as well.
That's awesome. You're changing lives for the better, David. And I appreciate everything you do for the, you know, for the next generation of golfers coming up. I wanted to say that publicly.
Well, I hope they're not watching my swing because it might not be the
best idea. I wish I had your swing, to be honest with you, because it works.
I'll find a way.
Yeah, for sure. So going back to last year, you qualified for the U.S. Mid-Am. Talk us through that, not only leading up to the Mid-Am, you know, with the qualifier and everything, but to just what that experience was like going to a national championship.
Yeah, uniquely enough, that was the first time I had ever tried a mid-am.
Okay.
I always had the desire for the USAM. That was kind of the thing in my mind of, you know, trying to accomplish it. And then also the USAM, just from a schedule wise, it was the one time that it was not a national title or a national championship that would have interfered with school.
Okay.
Because
sure.
Even though as teachers or people joke about us being part-timers, you know, as teachers, you know, and get the summers off. I don't play as much golf as I like to with my family, which is important, and my boys and my wife. And so I'd never tried it. And I don't remember what it was, but I think we were just talking with some guys afterward. And I said, what the heck? Let's give it a shot. I've never done it. And so I hadn't been a few years since I'd really done qualifiers. I think I'd done had done a couple of random USAM ones, but as you know, I kind of have to pick and choose with, I have the boys in the summer and, you know, my wife's working full time. And so if I play, it's kind of either the par three with them or the backyard chipping around. And, so I wouldn't say that, you know, I've always kept my game in top shape, but I try to play the bigger events. And so last summer was really good that I started off the year in the state mid-am in Spencer and played really, really solid and just had that taste of it, you know, playing with someone like Nate in the final group and, you know, playing right with him until the end. And it just kind of, again, it's the one thing that we have that keeps your juices really going in terms of that competitive fire. And, you know, I followed that up with a decent showing at the match play, but just wasn't consistent and kind of had some events like the Masters and the AM that I didn't play great at. I played well for a majority of it, but had some bad holes. And, you know, and so I kind of just tried to reflect on what it was. And in a qualifier, you just got to go get it. And so at Muscatine, it's kind of a old kind of just different track. And it appealed to me a little bit in the practice round. And, I felt good about the course, you know, and I was just kind of curious on how my game would react in a high competitive situation. And it was kind of one of the starts of the round. It was kind of that mundane of, a simple or a nice par on the first, kind of a nice par on the second. And then the third and the fourth hole kind of got me pissed off a little bit, actually, because I think I had, a good birdie on, or I could have a good birdie on three, but I missed the putt. And then on the next hole is a par five. And I think I had a little flip 50 yard wedge. And I think I chunked it. It was awful. I think I left it like 20 yards short. And I just mentally told myself that you just have to be committed and go get it. And I ended up draining that putt from like 20 feet to save par, which again, thank God for my short game. Mm-hmm. And the next hole, it was a long par three and I hit a really, really good shot to 15 feet and made another putt. And that kind of just set the tone for the rest of the day. I hit some really good putts, hit some just really good shots when I needed to. And, you know, it was one of those ones where I think on 17 was, I didn't know what I needed. I knew I was going to be right there. But I hit another, you know, really good putt off from the fringe on a tough par five, and then got a little aggressive on the last hole because I didn't know what I needed, but settled in with a two putt, find out that I was right there on the basically going to have a chance for a playoff, and then got in a playoff against four really good players. And I was probably in the worst shape on the first playoff hole. I pulled my drive to the left, but old Meckling told me I had that was a sexy up and down that I made, because I think I was the only one off the green. Everyone else had a birdie putt. I think I was like 20 yards short and I chipped it up to about a foot and a half. And then made a great swing and qualified. And I can't tell you how just ecstatic I was. That was just one of those moments where I knew I had accomplished something pretty good that has always been a dream of mine, to play in a USGA event and play at a national championship. And that was pretty awesome. That I walked back from the clubhouse and that was just one of those, or to the clubhouse. And that was just one of those feelings of, holy crap, I did it. Like, that was pretty awesome. And it definitely has soaked the fire a little bit. So, but yeah, that was a long story to get to that point, but that was a cool story. Cool experience to get that medal and to, to know that I had I was going to play at a national championship for sure.
Dave, what do you remember? What do you kind of take away from playing in that national championship once you got out there?
Well, my first reaction and the reminder was I knew it was at Aaron. I didn't know about Blue Mound or anything about it at the time, but I knew it was at Aaron. And in all frankness, I said, holy shit, am I going to be able to reach the greens in two? Because that place is a monster.
It's huge.
That place was huge.
I was there for the U.S. Open, and I could not believe how big of a property it was.
I mean, and so I was like, okay, all right. All right, we'll see how it goes, you know, because we don't necessarily play anything at that length. And I remember getting the, you know, notices to the players and set up and stuff. And I think it was set up at basically at 7,400 yards. And that was a little crazy to just see that yardage number. But I was stoked. I was excited. So I ended up calling a longtime friend of mine from growing up that I played basketball and golf with in Minnesota, and he was going to be my caddy. So I had a looper at least for walking Aaron, which was great.
There you go.
So it was kind of fun to be able to, one, I asked my, my players, cause this was going to be during the golf season. I had to kind of do the thing of my bosses here were great. They were going to have no problem with me taking the time. And then I asked my players, cause I was going to miss a meet, if I could take the time. And again, jokingly, they said no, but they were super excited and proud of me to be able to go do that, which I can't thank them enough for letting me. And then, so driving up, I was able to schedule a practice round with Mr. Mike McCoy, and Nate, and I couldn't have asked for a better practice round companions for those days to play Aaron and to play Blue Mound, with those two players. That's pretty awesome. And just to see how they navigate and talk about their prep and just to have a little learning and just have some fun with them too. That was great. And then we were able to play, at Aaron Hills, with Mike, Canfield, who qualified with me as well.
Yeah.
I remember Blue Mound was Seth Rayner designed, and I'd heard of that name, but he is creative as hell. And that golf course, Nate and I walking down the fairway, on the first hole, we're like, has anybody touched this place in 2 weeks? I mean, it was pristine. It was just perfect. And we loved it. We loved the track. It was a great setup. I felt really comfortable. I felt more confident after I seen that there than I did at Blue Mound or at Aaron. And sure. So I loved that place, and it had some really cool history. Gene Sarazen won a PGA championship back there in the 30s. Babe Dietrichson Zaharis won an event back there. So very historic club. So just really cool to have that opportunity to play it. And then the next practice round was at Aaron. And yeah, like you, my first reaction was, holy cow, this place is just huge. And just seeing the yardages. But playing it the day that we played it, luckily it was kind of calm, but I felt more comfortable with it. And that was going to be my first round was at Aaron. So that was great. Again, just the experience of with those guys and whatnot. And it was gonna be great. My parents were gonna be able to come over, and then my wife and sons were gonna be able to come up. And so that was just kind of a comfort with that, and having Pat, my buddy, on the bag, he's got the personality that you just want someone to hang out with. And so that was gonna be great. And I definitely remember being, I would say, competitively nervous on the first tee. But I had a good mindset and hit a decent tee shot. And it sticks out vividly because my tee shot just ran through the fairway because it's so firm and fast. And I could barely hack it up maybe, 100 yards. I mean, it just caught the club and turned it over. And it kept me in some long crap on the left. But I was able to, again, I found a way to get on the green, and I hit a speedy 12 footer down the hill and made the putt.
Nice.
And I was super jacked. I made it's a 460 yard starting hole.
Yeah.
Just going, oh my God.
Here we go.
And then the next hole though, that it kind of brought me back down to earth because I piped a drive I had a little wedge in my hand and I chunked it, just a complete chunk. Super tight lie in the middle of the fairway, should have been go zone, and I completely chunked it and I make bogey. And it kind of just brought me back down to level playing field. And next hole, make birdie, and just kind of went through my first nine, which was the back, and just kind of got up and down a couple of times, made some really good putts, made some really, really good iron shots in to make birdies. And I turned at one under. I think the pros got it lucky because they kept telling us, or guys kept telling us, they felt that they set the course up harder than they did for the Open when Brooks won it.
Really?
And one of the changes that they made was for those guys, they played one as a par five. Mm-hmm. Well, they changed one for us into a par four.
It's a big hole.
It was a 496 par four.
Yeah, it's a big hole.
And that's just stupid. with the bunkering that they have in that fairway and the wetland on the left.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing that happened was a front came in, and we knew storms were supposed to come the next day, but the front started coming in, so the wind direction changed. And so to play that hole and the next like three or four dead back into the wind were just brutal. And I thought I played really good golf on that stretch and kind of held it together. Fun memory. I think I made about a 60 foot bomb on, I think it was six, really long par three to get it back to even. Missed a really good chance to get back under on the next hole. But if you would have told me that I shot one over at Erin Hills in my first national championship, I would have
100% taken it.
200,000% walked away with that. Because I really felt that now I was in position, and I actually, like Nate, thought Blue Mound was a better fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just with our game and how we hit it and stuff. So I was excited. I think I was in like a T47 and couldn't have been happier. And then next day we had the rain. Milwaukee got 7 inches of rain that night. So nobody played Sunday, which was super, super disappointing. And then somehow, and kudos to the staff at Blue Mound, more specifically, because I think Erin drained pretty well, but Blue Mound got the course to the point of playability. Okay. But man, did that place change, because that par 70 turned into like a 7,500 yard golf course with how wet it was.
Sure.
And the thing I learned about Seth Rayner was the green complexes he creates are diabolical.
Okay.
And it was amazing. The greens still rolled the way they did. I mean, those things were speedy, but that rough was brutal. And I remember that you had to be perfect there in the first place to even get after a pin. But second, after the rain, it just made it just a chore if you missed the fairway. So I think I started off okay. I was one over through seven. So I was right there. And then eight, I didn't even hit a bad drive, but that was another, just, I think that's for sure the hardest hole there. It was 490 back up the hill. And I just missed the fairway and I could barely advance it. And then again, with his green complexes, I got in the wrong spot and I make a double. And then I made a bogey on the next, and it just kind of knocked the wind out of me a little bit. And I tried to grind, but I think I missed a few too many fairways that day and ended up on the wrong side of the cut line. But I think at the end of that, and even though as frustrated as I was, that was awesome. That experience of just playing it, of meeting the people I did. I think in the practice round, Mike and Nate know everybody. I think I ran into probably about eight guys who won USGA national titles. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Besides Mike, I mean, mm-hmm. Nate Smith, they introduced me to a couple other guys. It was just, you know, incredible, the talent. And
sure.
I think it gave me some confidence knowing that I'm capable of being in a place like that and playing in events like that. And I just need to use that to to keep driving me to play more, because I am an ultimate competitor, I would say. It's why I love coaching and being a part of teams like I am. And again, just that taste was pretty cool.
David, this is a question I ask a lot of our guests. Are you a guy, when you're able to, I know you said you got a lot on your plate, but are you a guy that likes to go to the range and hit a lot of balls, or would you rather just go out and play and kind of work on your game as you go around?
It's a good question. I've never been a range rat.
Yeah, okay.
I would say I've never been a range rat. I think, again, I have to prioritize my time. The one thing I have always been able to do, and if I do something, is to go around the green, work on short game, work on putting. I've been lucky that my sons have taken on golf a little bit, that they like to go play and kind of just have fun drills, and just kind of, we make games out of it. And so that's been fun to do that with them. So it's kind of where I wish I had a little bit more time to just be a little bit more precise. So I have to be diligent with when I do go to the range to do a little bit of prep, that I, again, focus on just some things I need to do. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, I play much better competitively than I do just on a random, going out playing with buddies. Because I think my focus is there. I think the drive's a little bit more there. And I enjoy it differently, I would say. I think that part of it, I love playing for fun, but I also enjoy the extra little drive that it has.
You bet. We're getting closer to our season and starting up, David, and we go back to Geneva for our state mid-am. So I'm sure you got that one circled on your calendar, but maybe is there a couple other events you're kind of itching to get after this summer? I know you like to play in as much as you can, as you're able to, but anything that you really have circled on your calendar?
Yeah. So again, partly lucky enough of my admin, I'm going to be able to still take a couple of days off in May. So
good.
A former Simpson alum and I, Trent Lindemann, are going to team it up again and go out to the four ball there in Burlington. So excited to do that with Trent again. Trent and I teamed up last year, and he's a great guy and a hell of a stick. So he never misses a fairway, by the way. So I'm excited to go play with him and again, get after it on the course and the team competition. I think that's always so much fun to play with others and kind of have that that chance to build off each other's games and just enjoy the time on the course. The mid-am is going to work again, and I think it's going to be really fun that you guys set it up as a 3-day event. I think that makes it a lot of fun to stage that championship for 3 days. So excited to see. They were doing a lot of work at Geneva last late summer. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see the course and see how that all kind of grew in and the changes that they made. So that'll be fun. I love the match play. I think that's just so fun to play. It's a different style, and I think it's just fun to be able to do that. And Mr. Allball has been great for letting the IGA host it at Talons, which is, again, the purest greens I think I've ever putted on. So that's always a fun event, and to be able to do that. And then I think I'm going to give the USAM a try again this summer. It's at Coldwater.
Mm-hmm.
So partly for us old guys, the walk there is going to be a lot better than some of the places that it's been recently. So the 36 hole grind, one last summer of that will be nice. I saw mm-hmm. the USGA change that to a separate qualifying.
Yeah. Two stage. Yep. Yep.
I think that'll be helpful for a lot of us older folk that grind is that's a really hard day of golf, but I think I'll give that a shot again. And then the state am always, that being around the area at Glen Oaks is great for just the busyness of my family schedule. And then the mid-am is the qualifier. Will probably be in my cards again before the fall golf season starts for me as a coach. And I think that kind of are the big ones on my radar. I think, if I can squeeze something else in of, you know, trying to do the Iowa Masters and, you know, playing in that great event that has been so well supported, or trying to get into, you know, the Classic in the fall sometime possibly. Well, I get jealous of all my players continuing to play golf. You know, we'll try to get as many as we can, but
sure,
it's going to be gonna be fun, and hopefully I can keep building on some really positive positive memories from last summer.
You bet. Well, David, thanks for taking some time to come on the podcast. So look forward to seeing you out this summer, and wish you nothing but the best.
No, thank you very much for having me. And again, I can't say enough about what you guys do for the game and for supporting all of our interests in the game of golf and kind of continuing to grow that. It's pretty cool to see what the IJ's evolved from when I was there. And, you know, it's you guys do a lot for us. So we appreciate all of that, and excited for the summer and getting back on the golf course.
You bet. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Clint.